Tantar Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Speak No Secrets by E.R. White. Narrated by Megan Kelly and Kurt Bonham. Chapter 1. Shiloh. Backstage at Kendrick's, the strip club where I earn my second paycheck, noise washes over me in waves I try to tune out. I need to focus. Get my head straight before I walk out on stage and become someone else. I use the knitting in my hands to help do so. It keeps my thoughts busy and prevents them from dwelling on the fact that I'll be naked in front of strangers in a few short minutes.
Can't fucking hear anything back here.
Mandy moves closer to the small television mounted on the wall above her station and turns the volume higher, her attention riveted by something on the screen. It is loud in our dressing room. Loud everywhere, really. Dancers talking in excited tones as they come and go. Danny shouting from somewhere distant. The music a steady pulsing backbeat as we prepare ourselves for our various acts.
What's going on?
I ask, my attention fixed on the knitting in my lap.
Oh, those missing girls. They still don't have any leads.
I glance up at the TV with a frown, listening to a poised desk anchor describe the chilling scenario taking place just miles down the road.
And in this weekend's news, a sobering new mystery on the campus of a Charlottesville university. Madison Bryan, a junior majoring in nursing, is the third young woman in a six-month span to be reported missing. Police are investigating, but like the first two missing women cases, leads are remarkably scant, leaving detectives with little direction.
That is terrible, I say when the story switches. That was my university. Those girls, they could be my friends.
Girls from my dorm. Women I stood in line next to in the campus coffee shop.
You're up in 10, Shiloh.
Danny sticks his head around the door jamb of the dressing room, eyeing me up and down dispassionately as he chews on a pen.
Kay.
I nod, shaking the depressing sorrow of the news away, and frown down at the sweater I'm working on, unsure about the scale of the pattern I chose. I'm not sure it's going to fit.
What the hell is that?
Danny asks, lingering in the doorway and pointing the pen at my creation.
It's a sweater. I think I'm going to give it to Jay. It's looking kind of big.
Jamal, or Jay as we call him, is our bouncer extraordinaire here at Kendrick's Club. He is like family, sweet and overprotective, and a plain old asshole to the deserving. I adore him. Danny raises his eyebrows and shakes his head.
I see. Well, if it's all the same to you, don't make me one. Good thing you're hot, huh? Get out there and shake some ass.
Good thing you're the boss.
Yeah, okay. He disappears, and I place the knitting in my big bag on the floor, shoving it under my station. I stand to survey my appearance in the floor-length mirror of the club's dressing room, searching for any wardrobe flaws that will detract from my performance. I'm dancing the stage tonight, doing my irony-filled sexy teacher routine. Irony-filled, because I actually am a teacher during the daylight hours. Dancing in a club is so far off from what my contract states I'm allowed to do for supplemental income. It's just not funny. Beggars and choosers, though. My options have been narrowed down to stripping a few nights per week or working a call center for $10 an hour. As distasteful as it is to flash my boobs at strangers, stripping gets me where I need to be. I can earn in a single night of dancing what would take me several weeks to earn working customer service or retail. And I need the money. As I survey myself in the mirror, Leela Coco Carnes walks in, her completely natural and completely massive boobs jiggling.
She likes to walk around topless, her way of freeballing things and driving Jay crazy in the process. Being a little fuller than many on top myself, I don't get it. It is so not comfortable. How's it looking out there tonight, Leela?
It's a crowd,
she says.
They're rambunctious, too. I think we got some young blood in there.
I nod. Leela, wait. She stops and glances at me curiously. Do you know where that came from? I point to the single purplish-black rose sitting on my station. I saw it when I arrived earlier, but there was no card. It's not the first, but it has been a while since one appeared. I asked Danny about it when I got here, but he had no idea. Leela shakes her head with a frown.
Neither do I. Sorry. Looks like you have an admirer, though.
She sits down at the station beside mine and starts touching up her makeup. An admirer. Disappointed she knows no more than Danny, I pick up the flower and drop it in the trash can beneath my station. Sometimes it's a rose, sometimes it's a dahlia. Both are always a deep purplish-black hue, a color that feels unnatural and vaguely ominous. I thought they were done, I murmur.
The flowers? Well, don't worry about them. They're harmless. How's that brother of yours?
Leela asks, nodding to the photo I keep on my mirror of the two of us. She knows it's my reminder. Knows he's my why. The photo was taken shortly after I moved to Virginia to live with him and Mom. In it, I'm making duck lips at the camera, and he's got his arms around my waist, eyes squished shut as he hugs me. I remember that hug. Those skinny little boy arms wrapped so tightly around me. I complained about him not ever giving me enough space, but he was such a good little brother. He still is. Circumstances have changed us both irrevocably, but that part hasn't changed.
He was doing great when I went to see him last weekend. Same goofball, trying to hit on all the nursing staff from his wheelchair.
Leela hooted.
I bet they love that. He's such a cutie.
They love him there. We lucked out, but I'll be glad when I can bring him home. It is so freaking expensive, Leela. I don't like to think about our financial needs. I don't like to consider how long I could conceivably be dancing to get everything paid. The bills are mind-boggling and a little depressing. Sammy's medical costs are nothing short of robbery on the one hand, but necessary on the other. His spinal and brain injuries required much more care than I was equipped to handle without special intervention. I am just thankful he's still here with me and that eventually his doctor believes he'll be 100% again. I kiss my fingers and place them softly on the photo. And Leela sends me a sympathetic look. Mom's private insurance coverage had always seemed perfectly reasonable until I needed it for Sammy's private care. When she was killed in the same collision that injured Sammy during my freshman year of college, it helped expense a piddling portion of her funeral and the mounting medical debt, leaving entirely too much to pay with additional college costs and no real job. I learned fast that the complicated care for a person with Sammy's kind of injuries came with staggering bills. When I was faced with how much I was going to be responsible for afterward, the amount was enough to make me consider, for one brief, shameful second, climbing in my car and running far away. It just wasn't fair. I had plans. There was so much I wanted to accomplish. I needed to finish my degree in photojournalism and get the hell out of BFE Virginia, also known as Lucy Falls. But then I looked at Sammy's beautiful face, unmarred by the damage to his brain, and I couldn't do it. There was no one else. Both our parents were dead, and we had no other family,
leaving my options to either make Sammy a ward of the state or take on his guardianship myself. Giving him over to the care of the state wasn't an option. I was terrified that his care would be less than optimal, and his eventual recovery would end up delayed or impossible. A low buzzer mounted over the door leading to the stage draws my attention, alerting me that it is almost time. Other than this single stage dance, during which the bright lights lining the lip of the stage prevent me from seeing the faces belonging to the catcalls and whistles that echo up from the floor, I'll be in the peeps for the rest of the evening. Maybe it's strange, since tips are much less in the peeps than they are out on the stage, but I prefer it. Although it's one-on-one, and in some ways I'm much more on display, in the peeps, I'm kind of distanced from my clients. Based on the old dollar peep shows and buddy booths that became popular in 1960s Times Square, the peeps are basically a display box for the dancer. A clever lighting effect reflects my own image back at me and helps me pretend that I'm just dancing for myself rather than dancing for the mortgage, Sammy's care, and plain old desperation. I can pretend I'm in my bedroom, dancing for my imaginary lover. I never have to look into someone's eyes and see my own limited choices staring back at me, compounded by greed and lust and things that make me feel small and vulnerable. I wish I could be more like Leela. She loves the dance, loves the sense of body positivity and strength she wields. This is so far outside my comfort zone, however. It's difficult for me to enjoy it. But it's the stage first, so I take a final peek in the mirror and one last breath before I head out on stage. I'm dressed in a deceptively conservative pencil skirt that fastens at the waist and a white button-up blouse, along with a pair of spinsterish spectacles perched on my nose. For some reason, guys love the dichotomy of the straight-laced glasses paired with the pure sex that my body becomes as I dance. My hair, a warm chestnut color, is pulled up into a prim bun. Aside from the fact that the skirt is cleverly designed to give so I can move in it with ease, the costume could be a part of my everyday teaching uniform. Satisfied, I pull a single wavy tendril of hair down to tease my face and start for the stage. The stage is darkened between acts to conceal setup activity and the dancer's appearance until the music starts and the act begins, so I make my way to center stage in relative darkness. It is set with a sturdy wooden teacher's desk situated just behind the pole. There's even a shiny red apple placed atop it. I run my hands nervously down my hips and take my spot in front of the desk, bending just slightly over it, with my backside facing the audience. Regardless of how many times I've danced this dance, nerves and an unsettling sense of vulnerability always assail me at its start. I swallow them down, though, and fix a blank mask in place as Danny's disembodied voice introduces me. The spotlight flicks on.
Give it up for Miss Cherry Pie, the hottest teacher you fellas never had.
Inwardly, I roll my eyes at the stage name Danny came up with for me. Cherry Pie. It's the epitome of high skank and sweet innocent at the same time. Scattered applause and a few raucous whistles break out as the opening bars of Ed Sheeran's Make It Rain tag the end of his words, and I begin to swivel my hips in slow, seductive circles. Showtime. As the sex-filled notes of the music fill the blackness beyond the spotlight, I move through my routine, marking out the moves in my head. As always, I place myself squarely in the world of the act. For these next few minutes, I cease to be Shiloh Brookings, 22-year-old novice teacher at Lucy Falls High. I become instead Miss Cherry Pie,
sexiest school teacher ever to write on a chalkboard. It's the end of the school day, and with her door securely locked, Cherry Pie likes to indulge herself in blowing off a little steam. It's not how I envisioned myself making use of all those dance classes I took as a kid, but I guess my youth wasn't misspent, as it is proving useful. Walking around the desk with deliberate steps, I face the back of the stage and raise a hand to my hair, releasing the bun to allow my heavy hair to fall halfway down my back. I shake it loose and move back to the front of the desk by simply sliding my body across its surface on my rear, and then take up a provocative stance before it, moving my hips sensually right to left, and then leisurely down into a squat. I take the apple in one hand as I do so, and then pivot 180 degrees until I'm facing the audience. Releasing the desk, I trail the fruit along the side of my body and to the insides of my knees before I press them abruptly apart, offering the audience a tantalizing glimpse of my thong-concealed goodies framed by the split of the skirt. Then I coyly press them closed again and rise, apple still in hand. Trailing the fruit back up to my mouth, I turn my head to the side and give it a long, slow lick before tossing it out into the audience. A series of cheers and hoots rises from the watching audience, and as it dies down, I'm able to catch snatches of a conversation from a rowdy group at a table just in front of me.
Hot as shit. That ass, though. Damn, girl. I want an apple.
A groan emerges from the group, catching my attention. It's almost indiscernible, low and rough-edged, but it scrapes against my nerve endings and sends a spike of electricity dancing along my spine. I tilt my head back and expose my throat in a blatantly female response and keep moving. Gazing blindly into the general area, I infuse my expression with intent, and with a lack of speed I know is excruciating, unbutton, and begin to lower my skirt. I let it hover for just a beat at the apex of my thighs, circling leisurely until my butt faces my audience. Then, with a teasing look over my shoulder, I let the skirt fall and kick it back into the crowd. As always, catcalls arise at the sight of my butt, clad in a scanty black thong. As I do every night, I offer up a brief thanks for bar and butt clenches. My ass, while a little on the round side, is high and tight. Then I let my top drop down to hide it, teasing the audience once again. My white button-up just brushes the tops of my hips as I shimmy a series of risky business-style steps that I know from experience will have my audience intent on my thighs as I work to free the buttons of my shirt. Even as money begins to rain, though, I'm more interested in that single voice rising from the group in the front. I can't quite identify what it is that has caught my attention, just that it has, which is a rarity with the music in my ears. Turning back around, I maneuver back to the edge of the stage by the owner of the sexy groan and fling my shirt tails open. The group of men are talking again, and someone mutters,
"Holy shit and fuck me sideways,"
accompanied by a grunt that sounds almost like pain. Although I can't see the man's face and fully recognize he could be 70, obese, or a bona fide creeper, a little smile crosses my lips at the sheer power I wield in that moment. It's one of the first times I haven't felt vulnerable up here. I feel empowered, full of age-old feminine influence. This must be why Leela loves what we do so much. His voice sounds young, and I choose to imagine he's hot. I reward the faceless, but maybe hot, man with a single digit trailed between my lips and then slyly down over my chin, my throat, my chest, and between my breasts. They're encased in a sheer white lace bra that contrasts with the black thong. I thrust my chest out and move to the pole to swing around in a series of erotic arcs before landing and continuing to dance. The sound on the floor has grown to deafening proportions, almost drowning the music out by now. I'm dancing purely by routine and in accordance with the thrum of bass I can feel in my bones. There are bills, business cards, and flowers littering the stage, and I know in a minute my final articles of clothing will need to accompany them. So, I give them what they want. Stepping to the edge of the stage, right in front of my sexy groaner's area, I look blindly out and crook a finger into his general area. "Come hither," it says, its language timeless. I hear the shifting of chairs and then see a masculine shape standing before me, silhouetted by the stage lights glaring up. He is solidly built and tall enough that his head comes up to just under my chest, even as I stand on a stage that elevates me a couple of feet. He reaches out and grazes my belly. His skin is calloused and rasps against the smoothness of my skin, raising chill bumps. He catches me off guard, and my stomach flips, my breath catching in my throat. I peer out at him, but all I can see is a strong, shadowy jawline and the glint of pale eyes under a ball cap. Our eyes catch and hold as his finger takes a slow path upwards until it stills on the underside of my breast.
"Take it off!"
someone belts out, and the odd connection breaks. Deftly, he unsnaps my bra, but instead of looking down as my breasts spill free, his eyes remain on mine. His finger, though, trails a lick of fire as it glides down the center of my stomach to rest on the elastic band of my panties, which are suddenly strangely damp. I've never gotten turned on during an act before. I feel a tug and realize he's tucked some cash in the band of my thong. Blanking my face, I give him a saucy wink. "Thanks for the assist." I back away, let my shirt slide off my arms to the floor, and release my bra to one hand so I can toss it playfully. Then I bend to remove my heels and saunter smoothly off stage, routine complete. In the hall just off stage, I abandon pretense and sag against the wall, clutching the shoes to my chest.
"You okay?"
Jay steps on his way through, raising an eyebrow. "Fine," I mutter, just catching my breath.
"Righto, honeybee."
Jay disappears, leaving me to close my eyes in the stillness of backstage and curl my fingers more tightly into the shoes I have pressed against my flesh. They're shaking. My fingers. Who the hell was that guy? And why had he affected me so strongly? It was a mystery I wasn't certain I wanted solved.
Chapter 2. Gunner. Chin tipped in recognition at Miles, the bouncer at Kendrick's waves us in and replaces the velvet barrier rope as we file past. Bearing the same name as the club and its owner, has always given Miles, and me by extension, certain advantages. Miles punches me in the arm. "Tonight is your night, my friend. I am going to make sure it's the best one of your life." I give him a dubious look. "As long as you keep Mandy far away from me, we'll be okay. She's fucking obsessed. Don't give it another thought." Miles, a perpetually cheerful human puppy, places both hands on my shoulders and steers me across the foyer and through the interior club entrance. We stand still, taking it in. We've been here a few times in the past year, but the initial glimpse of the gentlemen's club never fails to impress. It's considered one of the most upscale clubs of its nature on the East Coast, catering to men with deep pockets and an appreciation for a pretty girl. One wall is lined with a gleaming dark wood grain bar, top shelf liquor in every assortment gracing its mirrored back. The deep red oriental-style rug is plush underfoot, complementing the black and white leather seating and the ruby drapes hanging at strategic intervals around the walls. When the curtains are pulled back, they reveal stages in varying sizes for the dancers. And the dancers. Good God, the dancers. Kendricks has always sought and found the most appealing women to decorate its stages, wait on its tables, and perform in its peep shows. In every ethnicity, shape, and size, they are skilled dancers and trained well in the art of being alluring. Or, as Miles likes to say, they're hot as fuck. He dragged me here tonight as an early 19th birthday present, saying that as one of the oldest seniors in our graduating class, I needed a gift that was appropriately mature. Seeing as how my birthday doesn't arrive for another month, I think he just wanted an excuse to come to a strip club without his girlfriend getting pissed at him. I didn't want to come. This one dancer, Mandy, won't leave me alone when I'm here, and it's driving me nuts. We hooked up last summer, and now she thinks we're in a relationship. She knew the deal, though. I don't do the girlfriend thing. I've only ever been interested in one girl, and until I find one who outshines her, I'm fine on my own. But if Miles acts as a buffer, I guess this place will be a welcome distraction from the shit show this year is already turning into. We're barely a month into the year and I'm already failing English, which means I'll almost certainly be kicked off the football team. Dad is going to be pissed, but the sad thing is, I can't even bring myself to care about that part of it. I don't want to disappoint Dad, but football is just something to pass the time. And college isn't my thing. All I've ever wanted to do is run the vineyard. But I don't want to be held back. Not at my age. Talk about being a fucking idiot. Resolutely, I turn my mind away from sinking grades, uncertain football futures, and my dad's looming disappointment, and Miles and I slide into a reserved half-moon booth near one of the stages. A waitress comes over with a few drinks that'll end up on Mr. Kendrick's tab.
Give it up for Miss Cherry Pie, the hottest teacher you fellas never had.
The disembodied voice of the announcer booms out over the audience, and Miles punches me in the shoulder. He's almost bouncing in his seat when I shoot a glance in his direction. What the fuck is up with you, dude?
Just watch, Miles says.
He can hardly contain his excitement. And my interest is piqued.
You are going to love this next chick. She has the best tits and ass I've seen in a while, and that's saying something. You know I'm happy with Sherry.
That is saying something. Miles and Sherry have been dating since freshman year, and he's crazy about her.
Huh,
I grunt. I watch as the dancer starts her routine, and I realize fast that Miles wasn't exaggerating. Miss Cherry Pie is a wet dream come to life, and seconds into her routine, I'm rapt. I can't keep a low groan from escaping as I adjust myself from our seat, directly beneath and in front of her stage. She is doing a sexy teacher routine, and if that doesn't hit straight to the heart of every one of my dirtiest fantasies, each sinuous twist of her body sure as hell does. Miles, sitting beside me on the bench, elbows me and brings his beer to his lips. His eyes are focused greedily on the woman on stage.
I wouldn't kick her out for eating crackers in bed, that's for damn sure, he says.
For some reason, his comment annoys me, and I give him a look. He lifts his hands as if to say, what the fuck? And since I have no answer for him, I turn my eyes back to the woman in front of us. I can't tell him not to look, and I have no idea why a part of me wants to.
I told you you'd like her, he mumbles into his drink.
Well, you were right. Now shut up and let me watch. I ease back in the booth and pull my ball cap down to shield the hunger in my eyes as I continue drinking in the woman dancing. There's something familiar about her, but I can't put my finger on it. Her skin is creamy pale, but dotted liberally with freckles that I can just see as close as I am. Lights from the stage catch tiny refractions, and I realize that she has dusted herself with some kind of shimmery powder. To hide the freckles, maybe? It didn't work. Her hair,
thick and coiling down to her ass, is the color of the contraband bourbon in the glass in my hand. And she's wearing fucking glasses.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?